everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. This week's podcast is brought to you by Roca Hemp, where farmers succeed. You can find Roca Hemp at rocahemp.com. That's R-O-K-A hemp.com. On this week's podcast, we'll hear from Joe Linney, who along with his wife operates Hoosier Hempster. You can find them at hoosierhempster.com. But first, we turn our attention to Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin is also the Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose McKinney and Evans. Justin, it's been a couple weeks. How you doing?
I'm great, Jason. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. Appreciate you being on the show as always. And when you're on the show, of course, we always get some great information, stuff that that we need to know in the hemp industry. But before we get to that, something else everybody needs to know, of course, is the Hemp at the Crossroads. We want to talk about this, the Midwest Hemp Council Hemp at the Crossroads event. It was huge last year, a huge success. Of course, with COVID and all that, it kind of made for a wacky year this year, but we still have a goal and we have our sights set on the Hemp at the Crossroads. So why don't you go ahead and discuss that? It's February 4th and 5th, so it is a few weeks away, a few months away, but it is coming up quickly.
That's right. And as you mentioned, Jason, we had our first conference last year. In November, we had about 300 people attend over a two-year period from all over the country. So mm-hmm. It was really exciting. You know, we did a lot of planning. You helped quite a bit as well. And, you know, everyone was kind of nervous, or at least I was. You know, we didn't know if people were going to show up or not.
So, right. Well, and of course, your fears were certainly set aside there after the first day.
Yeah, it was an awesome event. And this event's going to be no different. This year it's in Plainfield, Indiana, at the Embassy Suites Hotel. Mm-hmm. And it's actually right by the airport too. So this is over on the west side of Indy, basically, in a new location. So we wanted to make it as convenient as possible for folks coming from in and out of town. And that's one of the main reasons we chose this location, Jason, is because it's right next to the airport. And so we wanted to make it as easy as possible for folks joining us out of town to get to the venue.
And Justin, again, this is February 4th and 5th. So again, we've got a couple months, but that's going to pop up quick here. Of course, people can get more information on the website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. Just look for the Hemp at the Crossroads tab there. But when do they need to start thinking about getting tickets, or if they want booth space, that sort of thing? When do they have to start getting all that in order?
So great question. Registration has already opened. So if you are a member, you get a discount, an early bird discount, if you register before December 15th. Mm-hmm. And non-members still get a discount as well. You're just not as good as if you're a member of Midwest Hemp Council. So always appreciate the support. And if you're a vendor, like you said, get on our website. You can register there to set up on Thursday night, February 4th. And one kind of nuance here to make sure everyone sees this, because it would be very important to me, Jason. Mm-hmm. If you do stay at the hotel that's hosting our conference, that night it is an open bar with food as well. So for our welcome reception, if you do not stay at the hotel, it is a cash bar. So just something to keep in mind.
There we go. Talk about the speakers that will be coming in for this.
So one thing that we really wanted to focus on before we even went down this road of having a conference, Jason, was to make sure that we got, breaking information learned each growing season, because that's going to happen each year, out to the farmers and processors and everyone else who's interested. So one thing we're really excited about is having researchers from all over the Midwest coming to share their knowledge, what they've gained, working with our farmers in the fields, as well as with some of the laboratories to really examine the data and analyze results, mm-hmm. What's working and what's not. We also have, for the first time, Indiana Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch is going to be welcoming everybody early in the morning. So we're really, really excited to have her and really thank her for all the support she's had for the industry over the years.
So the Lieutenant Governor is on board with the hemp industry in Indiana, at least.
Oh yeah, she's a huge supporter, and the Indiana Department of Agriculture has really stepped up the last couple of years on helping promote and kind of keep us organized here in Indiana. and really promote the state to outside companies.
And of course, we are the Midwest Hemp Council, so that does include other states other than Indiana. We've got the Kentucky Ag Commissioner coming in, also some researchers from all over the Midwest.
Yeah, Commissioner Quarles is going to be giving our kind of our keynote speaker slot at the end of the day on Friday. So as you mentioned, we do make an effort to draw from people outside of Indiana. Mm-hmm. So we're just really looking forward to this conference, and kind of the number one question we get too is okay, what about COVID? If you choose to sponsor us, which we sponsor the conference, which we hugely appreciate, and we have to reschedule, we're just going to apply either, you know, your vendor or your sponsorship fees to a rescheduled event in the future.
Well,
go ahead.
No, I was going to go right ahead, Justin.
And we're not going to we'll not be offering a virtual option this year. So that's kind of what we're planning on. Just kind of fingers crossed that, you know, the country and Indiana specifically gets a hold on the COVID stuff, and just kind of acting like we're going to be able to do this in person in February right now.
Well, fantastic. And again, this is February 4th and 5th. So with the election, everything kind of going on in turmoil right now, at least we've got time to kind of let things settle and see where we're at and keep our fingers crossed that with COVID, we'll be out of the woods or at least close to it by then. And we can go out and have some fun and talk hemp and get together like we used to do back in the old days a year ago.
never hurts to hope, I guess.
There we go. So again, people can get more information on the MidwestHempCouncil.com website. Look for the Hemp at the Crossroads tab there, and you can get some more information on that. And Justin, let's move ahead here and talk about the Indiana Hemp Plan, which has been approved. So tell us what the Indiana Hemp Plan is all about and now what that means moving forward.
Another great question, Jason. This is something I've been a question I've been answering kind of nonstop since the news broke, and it's really important that people understand kind of what regulatory structure we're operating under right now as a result of this. And really, kind of the easiest way to say it is not a whole lot's changed in Indiana. We after Indiana issued the emergency rules back in December of 2019. That's kind of been the law of the land on, you know, whether you're processing in Indiana or you're growing in Indiana, you know, or you know, just handling someone else's hemp in mm-hmm. Indiana. Mm-hmm. We have very clear guidelines, which is awesome. Not many states do. We've had those on the books since December. So from kind of a farmer perspective or you know, an active industry participant, not a whole lot has changed.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, there are things to be aware of. So probably the number one benefit of getting this hemp plan approved by USDA, Jason, is we are no longer required to go find a researcher at an institution of higher education to sign on to our application and kind of, you know, be almost like a legitimizer of why you're growing hemp. So
right.
That is no longer a requirement, which
okay.
is great news.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like that would be a very cumbersome effort to have to make.
Yeah, and I think also looking from the researcher side, I think they're all relieved now that their phones are will stop getting blown off the hook, you know, random farmers calling them, asking them to sign on to some research proposal.
Right, right.
So I think it's a win-win all around, and it's just a further step in the right direction of really treating hemp like a, you know, a regulated agricultural commodity.
No, I was going to say, and then some other advancements there with no researcher required, and fees are included for the first time with third-party testing.
That's right. Another great point. So we're working on, we've gotten a lot of feedback on the fees. I think people got kind of spoiled that we have not had fees since 2014,
mm-hmm.
You know, associated with our program. Probably the number one thing to understand, at least here in Indiana, is by law, our program has to run on a fee-based system meaning those fees have to pay for the expense of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be high enough to cover the expenses. And by law, they can't really be more than those expenses. So it's actually a pretty healthy way to do it, in my opinion, on building out a regulatory structure.
Now, are all the other industries like that in Indiana?
So programs run out of this specific office is yes. And I think kind of the policy decision behind that, Jason, is they want to make sure that this is kind of a fee-based system. It's not a general tax on, you know, all citizens of Indiana. It's really just those people operating in a certain industry.
Well, there's a novel idea right there.
Yeah. So it's really, and if you can, we're actually working on a comprehensive chart here, a fee-based chart comparing Indiana's fees to the rest of our surrounding states and really to the benefit of our members. And one thing I think you're going to see is Indiana is actually one of the more reasonable fee-based systems out there compared to our neighbors, which doesn't surprise you, right? Indiana kind of prides itself on pro-business regulations or lack thereof.
So can you give us an example of some of those fees and how they would compare to other states?
So for Indiana, it's common for programs around the country to have it just an application fee. So if you're going to submit an application, here's your fee to even look at it. We don't have any application fee. So compare that with Kentucky. But that actually their online application is free as well. But if you wanted to do a paper application, it's $200. Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, it's all $100. In Missouri, it's $750.
And this is just an application to grow hemp.
Yes, that's right. Or process hemp or otherwise kind of transport hemp that's not yours.
To be involved in the industry, in other words, you're going to have to pay a fee in a lot of these states. But Indiana does not have that fee.
That's right. But we do have fees otherwise.
Sure. But again, there's something about an application fee that I don't care what you're applying for. It's just a little irritating that you're applying and you have to pay for it. But what are some of the other fees then that we're looking at?
So like for here in Indiana, grower's fee was $750. The handler's fee is also $750. So if you wanted to do both, that would be $1,500.
Does this and again, the purpose of this, obviously, there are things to be paid for. There are man hours there. There is a process. But is some of this also to kind of weed out the folks that might just be like, hey, that looks cool. Let me fill this out and shoot it over there. And then kind of gets into the machine there and waste a lot of time. Those people end up just drifting away. Does it add some validity to it?
Well, I think maybe that might be a positive a benefit of a fee. I mean, again, these are really just costs covering really the testing program run out of the program. You know, you could argue that this, you know, that an application fee is exactly to deter those people you just mentioned. But really, at the end of the day, these guys are required by Indiana law to run the program based off the fees and nothing more and nothing less. So overall, it is, you know, the fees are quite high to operate in there, but it also, I think there's a, you know, there's a reason for it.
Off the top of your head, what looks like the most expensive state to be a hemp grower?
At least in the Midwest, you know, Kentucky actually looks kind of expensive.
Do you think that's because they've been at it for so long and they've kind of moved ahead of the industry and they're maybe charging for that?
Yeah. I mean, or it could be, since they have so many more people, you know, I don't know. I haven't really looked into it yet, Jason. I'm actually working on a spreadsheet here that we'll release to the members on kind of, not only comparing the fees, but also making companies and other farmers aware of fees in case you want to, you know, cross state lines ever.
Sure. Excellent. Well, that's always interesting to get information like that and find out how states are compared to others, where it's more expensive to grow, where it's less expensive.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, nowhere in these states are the fees cost prohibitive, meaning, you know, the farmers aren't able to do what they want to do.
Right. Let's talk about there's been some federal updates as well.
Sure. So we did send out a kind of a member alert yesterday. So check your member. If you're a member of Midwest Hemp Council, be sure to check your inboxes from yesterday for an email from us. We sent out an Indiana specific election update, and then we referenced our friends over at U.S. Hemp Roundtables kind of take hemp related take on the federal level. So the good and the bad on people winning and others losings that were, you know, supporters of the industry. And Jason, probably the biggest sigh of relief, at least for the hemp industry, is, you know, Senator Mitch McConnell won his race re-election handedly. And that was something I think a lot of the country was watching to see if the Democrats could gain enough momentum to unseat him. Senator McConnell has been there for a very long time.
Yeah, obviously very hemp friendly. And what about, let's talk about that Indiana election for a minute. You mentioned Lieutenant Governor is speaking. February 4th and 5th at the Hemp at the Crossroads. Of course, if the Republicans had not won, she would not be lieutenant governor at that time. So was that, do you think it was helpful or more helpful for the Republicans to win for the hemp industry, or did it really matter? And is that something that you'd rather not get into?
I think hemp has become a really bipartisan issue. I don't think there's an issue with either party. It's just, we need, it's a huge learning curve, mm-hmm. right? It's a new industry. And again, here in Indiana, at least, we're a part-time civil legislature. So, these men and women have jobs and careers outside of being a legislator and crafting policy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think in the end, look, we've gotten to where we are under, supermajority of Republicans. But at the end of the day, I don't think this is a partisan issue. It's really turning into, local economic development stories and these companies and businesses investing back into the communities in areas that haven't seen that kind of investment in decades.
And regardless of who is in office, we still need to continue to communicate with their congressmen and senators regarding, as you mentioned, H.R. 8179.
Yeah, and that's so both at the state and federal level, and specifically at the federal level, H.R. 8179 really is would require FDA to treat hemp products like a dietary supplement,
mm-hmm.
meaning here we already have a regulatory structure for products just like this. So let's make sure that you regulate it like that, and that way we can help weed out, the bad products, the bad actors, and potentially products that could cause harm to consumers. And that obviously, stories like that, the media loves to pick up on and kind of gives the entire industry a black eye, and just something that we can, it's something that we can avoid just by making sure we have, it's the rare time when an entire industry is begging the federal government to regulate them.
and so obviously there is a need for H.R. 8179, and that does add validity to the industry.
Yeah, and it does, and it really just forces FDA's hand on something they should have done a very long time ago. And again, people, the naysayers of the industry love to point to the overproduction, the oversupply of hemp biomass in the market, and point to that as a failure and see this is why it's never going to work. But, you can't have that conversation without acknowledging the FDA's inaction in this area, where it's really harming and prohibiting farmers from bringing new products to market.
And again, folks need to be checking their inboxes, their email box for these member alerts. And if you're not a member, you need to become a member.
Yeah, and thanks for the shout. Thanks for that, Jason. I need to do a better job at that. We are really essentially just volunteers trying to build and connect and promote the hemp industry, not in Indiana alone, also targeting the entire Midwest. And I think that's really important because businesses and farmers are starting to understand that right now, you pretty much need to be crossing state lines to find, partners or offtake agreements to be successful. It's too new of an industry to be really incubated in one state alone. There's mm-hmm. there's too many supply chain holes and supply chain needs.
And there's no sort of geographic contest.
That's right. No, I mean, I think, if we're going to be successful here, the industry needs to stay united. And I think it's done from a national level a great job of really speaking their minds on, in particular, the USDA's interim final rule, where, USDA is using their enforcement discretion not to require some of the DEA, the ridiculous DEA requirements in there. That doesn't happen often where the federal government really backs down on issues. Mm-hmm. It's not a competitive thing at all. It's really, we need every state to be successful. That way the whole industry can be successful.
And that's the purpose of the Midwest Hemp Council. And a lot of people all over the Midwest and the country praise the Midwest Hemp Council for kind of keeping things together and keeping people focused and showing the goals and giving folks a place to go. And again, can't stress enough, MidwestHempCouncil.com. Go there, become a member. And if this is something that you're looking forward to, if it's your future, you've got to be a member of the Midwest Hemp Council.
Yeah, absolutely. And always appreciate the support. So feel free to check us out. And if you have questions, we have contact information on the website.
All right. Once again, Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin, anything else that we need to hit on today?
I think that's it. Just stay engaged and keep following following the news, because I think we have a lot of positive things coming down the pipeline.
Fantastic. Justin, again, thank you, sir, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jason.
All right. All right, now we turn our attention to Joe Linney. Joe, along with his wife, Kelly, are owners of Hoosier Hempster, and you can find them at HoosierHempster.com. Joe, how you doing today?
Doing great, sir. How about you?
Doing fantastic. Appreciate you being on the program. Of course, Hoosier Hempster, a proud sponsor of the Midwest Hemp Council podcast last month, and we always appreciate that. And Joe, tell us a little bit. Let's get right to the crux here. Tell us a little bit about Hoosier Hempster and what you guys provide there, what it's all about.
Sounds great. Yeah, Hoosier Hempster is just an online platform for our trusted brand products. Basically, kind of to give you a little background about our story, we started out farming and needed an outlet for our products. We were a small grower and created Hoosier Hempster as our distribution and kind of like retail outlet for our products. Also, we started to partner up with different brands and so Hoosier Hempster is really a platform that we have transitioned more into building up brands instead of necessarily building up our own brand. We want to be able to create transparency in the hemp world and with the products that we represent with our brand partners.
Well, it's certainly great to be able to get products from other folks, but to be able to get them from your own backyard there, that certainly is very helpful. Unlike a lot of providers out there, you guys are you know, obviously growing your own product, some of your own product. Again, you're using other products as well. That would tend to be a smart business model there to include other products as well. But let's back up a little bit further then and talk about the farm. How long have you guys had your farm?
Gotcha. So we started up in 2019, Southern Indiana Hemp Farm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we were the first growers in Indiana. We were just super excited about that. You know, did all the things that we thought was right to do, start out small, get as much education under our belts as possible, and then to really try to create a good product within the hemp industry.
So how many acres are you growing?
We actually just grow around an acre.
Okay.
A small amount of hemp can go a long way. So we found that out, and how the shirts and the sayings, hemping ain't easy, that's definitely true.
Well, there's nothing, there's surely no reason to brag about 100 acres or 1,000 acres if you can't sell it and you don't know what to do with it. You've just put a lot of work in and no return. So starting small and working your way up is certainly, would sound like, once again, a good business model.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then we try to, you know, we heeded the word of a lot of the experts and everything, you know, Jamie Petty, a lot of the different people that we reached out to and talked to. They said to start small so that way we can mitigate our risk. And, you know, we just wanted to follow that model.
It's a very smart businessman that listens to Jamie Campbell Petty when it comes to hemp.
Indeed.
I can tell you that. So let's go back a little further. Now, we were at 2019 when you guys started planting. What was the catalyst that brought you to that point? How far back did it go that you decided we want to plant hemp, we want to get involved in this industry?
Well, you know, it was very, I wouldn't say spontaneous, but when we found out that, hey, Indiana is going to be on the cusp of being able to grow hemp, we can get our license and everything, then we started the planning process. But before then, we've been in several other businesses, like the real estate industry, the insurance industry, and we just wanted to have something, have a product or have a brand that we could essentially just help people out. And the more and more we researched hemp and, you know, cannabis alike, we found out that it's a very healing plant for a lot of people, whether it be anxiety or depression or, you know, helping people sleep and different things of that nature. So we wanted to be on the cusp of something, bringing something great to Indiana, and that's really going to help people out.
What kind of mistakes did you and Kelly make in the initial months and first year?
Well, that's a good question. a lot. You know, we try to do our best to vet the people that we got our clones from. We had some issues there. To come to find out, we planted our first year. Whenever we planted, it rained for a week straight after we planted, but we needed to get them in the ground because they were clones and they were, you know, pretty big. And so we've had a lot of mistakes, and we just learn from those things, right? You know, we don't down on ourselves, but it's very, if we see failure as not really a failure unless we quit. So if we keep going forward, it's all just a learning curve and trying to get better as we go.
Well, absolutely, without question. And again, in a new industry, there's not a lot of textbooks out there right now on how to grow hemp. And if there were, there's just no way they could cover every facet of the issues that pop up, unexpected issues that pop up.
Exactly. And, you know, the education is the key on that. Just keep educating yourselves on the process, you know, the plant. It's just a magnificent plant that we're just really beginning to scratch the surface on what we can do with it. And the further your education, we can't be stagnant. We got to keep moving forward. And I mean, the Midwest Hemp Council is just a perfect resource with all these get-togethers. COVID-19, you know, didn't really stop them at all because we had these networking nights via Zoom, and it was great. You know, we networked with people we probably couldn't network with before, different parts of the state, but we all came together on those Zoom nights. So it's great.
Well, and we just talked to Justin Swanson that was on just before you, and we talked about the Hemp at the Crossroads event coming up in February, and that'll hopefully be a one-on-one situation where people are able to look at each other in the eye and have a conversation COVID-free, not have to worry about all of that, and be able to concentrate on the actual love of hemp.
Absolutely. That'll be wonderful. We're looking forward to it.
And those are gatherings and situations that people that are new to the industry certainly need to get involved with, because as you said, there's a lot of folks out there that have made a lot of mistakes, but they're eager and happy to share those mistakes with newcomers coming in. And why not, you know, get that, tap into that experience, the experience you guys have sharing it with others as well. And also along those lines, you guys doing some business advisor situations there with, is that just in the hemp industry, or do you guys do that with other industries as well?
Well, so my day job, I'm an Indiana Small Business Development Center business advisor. Mm-hmm. So I help out with small businesses, whether it be startup assistance or, you know, expansion, and really just digging into just business things, you know, financials and things of that nature, how to market yourself.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I've got a little bit of background of entrepreneurship, and I just love helping out entrepreneurs, and whether it be, you know, restaurants or online retailers, but especially hemp's really like close to our heart. So that's, if anybody needs help with like creating some kind of plan, or if someone needs to vet a company, or if someone needs help reading a COA, we're more than happy to share that information, because we've learned some things along the way that wish we would have learned a long time ago that we know now, to how to vet certain companies and different things of that nature. So we'd love to share our knowledge however we can. We don't know everything, but we also have some good connections within the network of people that we can definitely connect the dots for some people too.
So Joe, when I come to you and I say, you know, I have no green thumb whatsoever. I've never planted anything in my life, but boy, I want to become a hemp farmer. What's your first line to those folks?
That's great. You know, everybody has their dreams and aspirations, but we got to come up with a plan on how to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Never grown anything, so we need to start digging into a little bit of, you know, how to do that. You know, what specifically for this plant. So, you know, we can learn about, you know, corn and soybeans and like all this stuff, but like this plant is way different. So, you know, a good resource would be to dig into a book by Ed Rosenthal. It's a whole, basically a canvas growing Bible, to where, hey, if you want to grow it indoors, they've got resources there. If you want to grow it stores. They've got resources there. So digging into that first and having a great resource would be that book. And then even anything online, I tell people just to start researching. YouTube's a valuable resource. You can learn anything you want to learn on YouTube.
Sure.
Let's start there, see if it's an undertaking that you'd like to do, and then we can kind of move forward with a plan on how to do that.
There we go. Joe Linney with Hoosier Hempster, along with his wife Kelly, founded Hoosier Hempster. What kind of products, what kind of things can we find at HoosierHempster.com?
Well, that's a great question. So, you know, we have had to pivot along with many other farmers and retailers. We used to have some, you know, really good flower products online, but we've shifted more toward our oils, other brand partners, oil, and then some other products. We do have salves and tea on there, mm-hmm. which is really different for the industry. We've created an herbal tea with our brand partner, Jubilee of Wellness. So that's great. And, you know, it's we're trying to be a little different in the products that we bring out just to kind of make ourselves stand out a little bit different.
And, of course, you're bringing in other products, but what percentage and how much of your product is mixed in there? And is that something I assume that's growing on a regular basis?
Yeah, absolutely. So with our first year's harvest, we created a small batch of CBD oil. It's a lipid infusion extraction that we got from an extractor, Michael Morrow with Tomorrow Solutions, a great extraction process. Doesn't use any harsh chemicals, solvents, or anything like that. It's essentially just the plant and MCT oil. So we're very proud of that product on a small batch level. We're still continuing to sell through that product now website. And I also was going to different farmers markets. And then our brand partner, Michelle Finn with Jubilee of Wellness, we've partnered up with her and she's selling through those bottles as well. So we're really excited about that product. Our teas are on there too. So we basically, with Michelle Finn's advisory, we've come up with that herbal tea blend. We've got three different blends, relax and sleep, energy and focus, and then moon time. And they're all different blends to do different things. Plus they have an added bonus of our Clark County, Memphis, Indiana grown hemp. So it's pretty awesome.
So, and so when you guys entered into growing, the, you were not looking to grow to then sell the product to other than your, I'm sorry, you wanted to create your own product as opposed to looking for a buyer for your hemp.
Well, so that's actually an excellent question, because at first we had other plans, and just like with everybody else, whenever your plans don't always work out, you have to kind of pivot a little
sure.
bit. So with the Midwest Hemp Council's network, since we couldn't sell our hemp back to the processor that we thought we were going to be able to at the time, we had to pivot, and that's how we met Michelle Finn, was through the Midwest Hemp Council network. So we came together. She already had a brand. We branded under her products for our oil and for our teas, so that way we had an outlet for it. So, you know, just the whole hemp industry, the whole time we've been in hemp, we've had to make lemonade out of lemons this entire time. But, you know, it's actually very fun to do so.
Sure.
Whenever a problem arises, you just have to say good and then figure out a solution to that problem instead of just focusing on the problem.
So it almost sounds like, and I could be off track here, but it almost sounds like the failure of the original idea is actually better, or turned out better than the original idea would have been, to simply just sell it off to a producer.
Indeed, yes. So, you know, we had to turn a frown upside down on that one. So, yeah.
Well, there you go. That's the American way. That's what we love to hear. That is good business. And once again, yeah. Joe Linney, along with his wife, Kelly, owners of Hoosier Hempster. You can find them at HoosierHempster.com. Obviously involved in the hemp industry and business in general. Joe, anything else that we can hit on here? We want to bring you back in the future. I know you've got a lot of information and that I've just found out about you and Hoosier Hempster and that sort of thing. So we want to bring you back in the future, but anything great else that we can hit on right now as far as the introduction to folks?
Yeah. So, you know, we just want to let everybody know that the brands that you see on our website, whether it be ours or, for example, we've got Farm CBD on there or Jubilee of Wellness products, we are focused on creating transparency in the hemp world and in the hemp industry. Mm-hmm. If you go to our website and buy a product, we're going to show you where it came from, who grew it, what kind of process it was processed with, whether it be the hand trim flower, a machine trim flower, or if it's a CO2 extraction for the oil, or if it's a lipid infusion for the oil. We're kind of revamping everything to bring that essentially seed to shelf or soil to oil kind of approach to where we can show complete transparency for where your hemp comes from, where your products are coming from, all the way to the bottle that it's in. So that's what our promise is to our customers. So that way they know what kind of product and what kind of quality they're getting. And, you know, it's not like they're going to go to a gas station to get a CBD that has nothing in it.
The worst idea ever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, we're just creating that brand, bringing on partners that will have the same ideas in mind that we do and want to bring transparency to this industry, because we feel that's what's lacking in the industry.
Yeah, to me, buying hemp or buying CBD from a gas station is like buying one of their hot dogs. That is a complete gamble.
It very much so is. And, you know, with research that we've seen, they've done studies to where they took random samplings from, you know, several different CBD companies, and some come to find out sometimes there's not even CBD in some of these products.
Go figure. Yeah.
Yeah. So whenever we have you know, the end product, we're going to show the COA on those products to where, you know, we're making sure there's no impurities in there, any mycotoxins, any heavy metals, things of that nature. So that way people know they're going to get a good quality product.
Fantastic. Once again, Joe Linney, along with his wife, Kelly. We want to make sure we get Kelly in there, of course. Yeah. HoosierHempster.com. Maybe we can talk to Kelly next time.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you've given us some great information, Joe, but we do want to, you know, share the spotlight.
She likes to be in behind the scenes. I'm kind of the talking head of the group. But she definitely has the majority influence over what I say.
There we go. Fantastic. All right. HoosierHempster.com. Joe, thank you again so much. And we do look forward to getting you back on the program. And if we don't get you back on before February, we'll see you out at Hemp at the Crossroads.
Hey, sounds great. I appreciate you having us on. And, you know, let's just continue to bring more transparency, bring more education to this wonderful industry so we can keep propelling it forward.
Excellent, excellent. All right, Joe, thank you so much, and we will talk to you soon.
Hey, have a good day, sir.
All right. And that's going to do it for this week's show. This week's podcast is brought to you by Roca Hemp, where farmers succeed. You can find Roca Hemp at rocahemp.com. That's rokahemp.com. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, midwesthempcouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.